What is this? Keep your station clear. Whenever it comes, what will happen? Messy station slow things down. Food doesn't go, others pile up, disaster. I'll make this easy to remember. Keep your station clear, or I will kill you!
Objective Secure Podcast. My name's Mike.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And this is episode 27, Keeping It Clear. We're going to be talking about clean play or playing clearly today on the podcast. And this is kind of focusing on the fact that we have our own Western Australian 40K Masters event just around the corner. And it's probably an apt time to start talking about how to be transparent in your play.
Yeah, and transparency is something that we've been talking about for the last, you know, 2.5-3 years that we've been running events, and you know, particularly while we've had the podcast and the Facebook Lives, something that I talk about all the time with our transparency and how that also relates to gaming and play as well.
Yeah, so we obviously talk about it in the context of sharing how the scoring's done and sort of showing behind the curtain for players what the TOs do and how we do it and why we make the decisions we make.
Mm-hmm.
This is focusing on your behaviour while playing and how you can make the game less confrontational for you and your opponent, and some of the steps you can take to, you know, be as fair and transparent in your, you know, actions as possible. But before we get into the topic, let's have a quick talk about what's been going on since our last podcast. We have seen a couple of 40K events here in Perth. We had Good Games host one. We've had Skulls 40K for Apo 6030. They also obviously ran Malifaux and Horus Heresy and a few other game systems on that weekend as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had a few different tournaments over here. We've also on the East Coast obviously had a number of tournaments happen straight after show, and I think there were three back-to-back-to-back on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Just gone. HammerCon, the Men's of Masquerade were two that I'm certain happened back-to-back, weekend after weekend. I want to say EastCon was the third.
It was.
So it's great to see the East Coast diving straight back into it, particularly when so many of them came over for show only a week or two prior. I actually think we went show, EastCon, and then I think we had a week gap, but I'm not sure. And then we had Menza, and then HammerCon. It almost feels like there were sort of four or five almost one after another.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting because certainly for us over on the West Coast, the end of the year tends to be a little bit quieter, but obviously one of the advantages of being on the East Coast is if you do want to go to another tournament,
there's plenty available.
And you can often just drive. You know, if you live in Sydney and you got to get to Melbourne, it's like a 45-minute flight, 50-minute flight, and it's not that expensive. So it's really exciting for the guys to be able to go and do so many events. So something I'm a little bit jealous of periodically. But yeah, so it's exciting to see the tournament circuit over there ramping up. We've also got the a lot of these states running their Masters 40K events basically through, I think, we're the first. And then I think New South Wales runs the week after.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say Victoria's either the week after or the week after that. And they're all kind of bunched up back to back to back leading into the Australian Masters event, which has had a format change this year. We're down to 16 invite-only players, and then there's an open being run beside it, which is, I think, a really good change for that particular event because it means that you are getting the top 16 players from around the country, and then if you still want to go along and be part of that experience and that event, you can still go along and play a tournament as well.
Yeah.
Which I believe is being hosted at House of War in Victoria, but don't quote me on that.
You should really check these things before we get on and start recording.
Yeah, but I think I know them, and that's part of the problem.
Yes, it really is. Yes, it really is.
So yeah, the end of the year is looking fairly busy for 40K, and then obviously once we hit January, we've got a couple of events that kick off, and then we move straight into CanCon, and it's all steam ahead for 2019. So it's going to be a busy few months, not just for us, but for the Australian 40K community. We've also got the Australian Age of Sigmar Masters happening very shortly, which is quite exciting. And we've also got the WA, he hasn't called it Masters, but we've got the WA end of year Age of Sigmar event, which I think is 34 or 36 players at the moment, which is really exciting for Mitch. That event's actually happening while we're not going to be in the country, sadly, so we won't have any coverage of that. Hopefully we can get some of the players to get photos and share them around, which will be really cool to see. But we'll actually be abroad for that particular event, so
yeah.
But it's going to be a very cool event by all accounts, and I've seen some of the prep work going into it. I know Beyond Games and Hobby have stepped in to sponsor the event as well, which is great to have another local company getting involved and supporting that.
As local as it is when they're 4 hours drive away.
They're not four hours drive away. Yeah, so there's been a lot of event planning and prepping happening in the last couple of weeks.
We haven't done enough. I've just sat here thinking, oh my goodness, we go away really shortly and then we're going to get back and it's Christmas and we haven't planned our 2019 year yet.
Yeah, that has to
apart
happen.
Apart from the fact that we've talked about when we're moving show to. So I think for me, well, I'm really sat stuff. Here thinking we need to sit down this week and plan out when we're running, what we're running and those kinds of things.
Oh, absolutely. The bookings will all have to go in before we leave.
Yeah, and that's really soon.
Yeah, so we're going to be, hopefully it won't affect the schedule for at least the podcasts because it should only affect one or maybe two episodes.
But we'll be and recording those before we go.
Yeah, we're going to make sure they're all scheduled and pre-recorded, so you won't have to worry about missing out on our dulcet tones for those 3 weeks.
Sorry about that.
I don't know whether we're going to be doing live over that week either, but I'm assuming not. We might do some sporadic live stuff, particularly while we're at Warhammer World.
I think when we're at Warhammer World, we'll definitely... well,
as much as we're allowed to.
Yeah, limited with what we can record, but we'll try and do something there. And yeah, but obviously with the Wednesday Night Live, it's a bit tricky with the time difference. And
well, it makes it like 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday.
Yeah, I think we might be spending time with our kids.
Well, my birthday's the Thursday, so I know we're at Warhammer World on a Thursday, and we'll be driving on the Wednesday. So, like, that could work.
Yeah, we're going to be driving with 3 kids and my parents in the car, and I'm just going to let you know that my mum doesn't like your driving at the best of times, but you're driving while doing a Facebook Live, that's not going to go down well at all.
She doesn't need to know, it's fine.
You don't think she'll notice the fact that we've got the camera set up and we're just chatting about this kind of stuff and interacting with people?
No, no, we'll just turn hearing aids off. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Oh, dear me.
We've also seen all the announcements now for Codex Orcs, which for the month they called Orktober, the Codex is released the first weekend of November.
Oh, it was announced though.
All the pre-orders happen this weekend. And
which
then
is still part of October, so
yeah, I think a lot of people assume we would have like 4 weeks of releases because they wanted to call it Orktober.
Yeah,
so I kind of get why they would have thought that, but at the same time, I think all Games Workshop really needed to do was shuffle things around and bring it forward a week, so you at least got the Codex this month.
Yeah,
but they've been doing all the normal preview stuff over the last couple of days with the Codex and showing off the stratagems and that sort of stuff on the community site, which we've got a lot of people excited, which is cool. We just need Gene Steel Occult next, which should, we've obviously already got models for those from the latest, the box that came with the Space Wolf, Tooth and Claw, I think it was called. And then we've only got 3 more codexes after that. We've got the Inari, the Sisters of Battle, which we'll get a beta version of in December as part of Chapter Approved, which I'm a little bit dark about.
Moving on, you've covered that before.
And then Imperial Agents, assuming they roll it in only one book. And then hopefully that's... well, no, they're not hopefully. If they do it in that format, then that's everything from the indexes, which means hopefully we can get rid of the indexes.
Awesome.
Which I'm very excited about. And I know lots of people disagree with me, but I don't care. As a TO, please get rid of them. What else have we been talking about and covering?
You were able to make it to the 500 store celebration.
Yeah, very late that day, but I got there nevertheless.
Yeah.
Which was cool.
Went down to the Beldivers store.
Yep, saw Stu. Yep. And got to chat to some of the guys. Lots of Night Vault being played at the moment. The Shadespire Season 2, as it were.
Underworld Version 2.
Yes, thank you. I noticed that they've repackaged the Khorne Warband you got in the old Shadespire box as a standalone Warband box. Yeah. So now you, I mean, obviously the Shadespy box has now been discontinued, as it were.
Well, it has been, but I've still seen that people are, you know, heading down to GW stores and purchasing it. So I thought the plan was that it was coming off the shelf and it would be mail order only, but people
no,
are still able.
No, according to what I've heard, I got told when I spoke to Stu, they're while stocks last. Once they're gone, they're gone. The core warband boxes, the two warbands that you came in the box will come as separate ones with all the cards that...
Yeah.
There's a handful of cards that came in Shadespire that you won't be able to get because they were Shadespire cards that came with specific to that game. So it'd be interesting to see whether we get a box. I think they were talking about a box of cards covering all of the other cards from Shadespire that you couldn't get.
Yeah.
So what it means is that, you've now got Night Vault if you want to start to pick up and play, and they've released the magic dice separately, so if you don't want to buy Night Vault, you can get at least get the dice that you need. And they've now got 3D like terrain markers and stuff that they've started producing as well.
Oh, cool.
Which we were talking about pre-show, I think it was, doing like hex terrain. Well, they've done it.
Awesome.
So that's quite exciting.
And it's not really surprising.
No, it's not. But I think the game in terms of risk for them has proven successful, so they're quite willing to start investing money in doing those sorts of cool add-ons that people will buy because it's cool, not because you need them.
Yeah. I hope that they keep it that you don't need them.
Well, I know that Night Vault has all the objective tokens and all the rest of it like a standalone game.
Yeah.
And the dangerous terrain tokens and everything in there. So again, if you buy Night Vault, you don't need the 3D versions of the terrain piece type stuff. And if you've got Shadespire, then obviously you don't need it either because you've got everything you need there. There's a few little tweaks in Night Vault from what I'm hearing, but nothing. Like, I didn't even get the chance to play it at show.
No, me neither. I didn't... barely got the chance to see it, so let alone play.
Yeah, but I did get a quick look at some of the rules. And yeah, it looks really cool. I like the fact that the magic's not stupid and powerful and making all the other warbands defunct. So it's going to be an interesting 12 months with Night Vault lurking around now. We're obviously going to try and host another official, whether they call it Grand, assuming it'll be called Grand Clash.
I'm assuming so.
At the next show.
Yeah, and speaking of show, we have a whole heap of articles that we're hoping to get published on the blog around. So when we talk about show, it's Southern Hemisphere Open, just in case you missed that. And we held Southern Hemisphere Open in September. And when I was going through the photos, my intention was to be able to do a write-up for the event the way that I would for our regular events. But then I realized I was so busy running around for the 3 days that I actually didn't see anything in enough detail to be able to write anything about it.
Yeah.
So I've gone and reached out to a few people who ran events or a few people who played in events and asked for them to write up their experiences or if they ran demos or RPGs, and then kind of marry the photos from that with the post that people write. And Brett Warhurst, who played in the Queensland team for the ATC, has very kindly written the first article. So if all goes to plan, that will be up this afternoon.
Yep. And then... like Emma's just said, we've reached out to the guys who ran Gates of Antares and Blood Bowl and Dark Age and all the other ones to see if we can get some hands-on experience from those TOs and what the games were like, because obviously they're in the best place to provide that information.
Vince has said he's writing a follow-up article to his getting ready Shadespire for the Shadespire Grand Clash.
Oh, that's going to be a bittersweet article, right? Because he got
so close.
He got right to the finale. He literally grand final playing for spots 1 and 2 and lost it at the final hurdle. From what I understand, it was even 3 games.
Yeah.
So it was 1-1 and then a loss in the final. So so close and yet so far.
Yeah.
But what else have we got?
That's all I've got. Masters is coming up. Show write-ups are going up. 500 store. Different events. That's it. Those were my notes.
Fair enough. My last little one then will be on my Dark Harlequin witch cult that has been slowly building and building and building beside me. It's, I think I'm now short. I've got to build one more plane, one more character, and then I've got to sort of finish building these two Venoms that are semi-assembled before I can hit the paint. So they're running a little bit behind, And at the moment, we're still trying to work out the schedule so I can actually get a game with them while I'm in the UK. At the end of the day, they might not come with me. If they're not ready, they won't. I'm not going to rush them. It's like any army. It's too much money to throw away, and it's too much. I want to do too much with them and spend enough time on them to do them right. And if that means I don't get to play, then I don't get to play. But it'll probably save space in the luggage as well. So we've also got a couple of things we are working on, which we hopefully will announce before we go, which is in a few weeks' time, which... Yeah, I think we've got one more podcast before we go, don't we?
Yes.
So all things being even, hopefully we'll be able to announce it on the next podcast, which is exciting for us, which leads into 2019. But
sadly not as exciting as what I wanted to be announcing, but
no,
I'm but still working on it.
The logistical hurdles of some things are larger than others.
Yes, they are.
Particularly when one doesn't cost us anything and the other costs a lot.
Well, still.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to get into the topic of playing cleanly. So we're going to start talking today about playing cleanly. And by that, I don't mean making sure your models are nice and painted or having a shower before you go and play.
Although, both important points.
Yeah, I guess they are.
They're very important. One, actually, no, both equally important.
They're certainly not the topic of today's conversation, though.
No, but now you've brought them up. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so if we're not talking about making sure you shower before you come to an event, which I do also think is important... what are we talking about?
So when I say clean play, I mean, we kind of hinted at the intro in terms of transparent play and playing clearly so your opponent knows what's going on. And this, again, applies to basically any game system that you could be playing.
Yeah, most
it obviously varies by game system because obviously some things are meant to be kept secret in certain games and some things might not be applicable at all just due to the nature of the game itself. But by and large... the transparent nature of a play makes the game easier for both players. So, yeah, that's kind of what we're going to be talking about.
So to dive into that a little bit more, some examples of that clean play is, I guess, around making sure that you're really open and clear with explaining and defining what dice you're rolling, why you're rolling them, how many you need, those kinds of things.
Yeah, things... Intent plays a big part in this, and this idea kind of stemmed from a conversation I was having in another group on Facebook about how you put it into a player's pack, about how you agree to monitor intent. And I think that putting a set of rules to try and monitor intent is always impossible because...
moved to a different topic, so can I get you to explain what you mean around this intent?
So... moving something somewhere and agreeing with your opponent that you are in range of X, so that...
Okay, so not what is the intent of the game, but what is the intent of a set
of your action, yes.
Okay, right.
And the guy in question, whose own intentions were very noble, was trying to put some boundaries into place about how you could monitor that at the table. And I think ultimately, unless you've got a referee at every table... that's almost impossible to monitor because it just becomes a he said, she said argument.
Yeah.
But if you can be clean with what you're doing, then that should never become an issue. So as an example, like you've just said, if I move a unit that has an 18-inch range on their weapons and I move just so that I'm within 18, I should at that point be going to you with the tape measure out on the table. Okay, I'm within 18. Yep, you understand that. Yep, we both agree. Awesome. Because what that does is set you up so that you can go, cool, I know I'm 18 inches away, which means I know my guns are in range. It also means that when you move next turn, if you move 6 inches, I now know that you are just within 12, which means you can declare a charge in 40K because you have to be within 12. But if you need to charge me, it's an 11-inch charge move. So by being... transparent with those sorts of very precise movements, it's less important when you know you're within 6 inches of someone and you've got a 25 or 24 inch range weapon.
Yeah.
But I think setting up those levels of intent clearly at that point diffuses potential issues later on, where you've just set yourself within a team, you haven't told your opponent, they've come to move, they've moved 6 inches, and all of a sudden they're saying it's a 10-inch charge.
Yeah.
And you're left going, no, it can't be because of this. Oh, well, I measured it and it's right. And at that point, you're back to an argument. So, and you've covered, or you mentioned rather, a whole bunch of things just there at the front end, particularly with dice.
Yeah. And that, I guess for me, that's what I see most often. So it's quite funny because I am not a fan of watching you play because you talk all the damn time. And it's always like, it's always the measures and the number of dice and what you're rolling for. And I just think, oh my God, just shut up and play the game. But obviously there's a purpose for why you're doing it.
Yeah.
I just find it frustrating. but what I do see often is people scooping up handfuls of dice and just throwing them and then moving them really quickly and not necessarily explaining them.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes this can come down to the experience of the players.
Yep.
And obviously ones that are more experienced can move quicker.
I also think it's to do with your own level of knowledge. So I played a game down at Crags, the local club, last week. Mm-hmm. The player in question is an experienced player, but it was a brand new army for me that I'd never used before. So
that you were playing with, or that you were playing against?
My Witch Cult, which I took down in a very hodgepodge form to just put on the table and have a run through with.
Yeah.
And
giant, very expensive carry case, plus Tupperware container stuffed with tissue.
Yes.
Yeah. Was awesome.
Because I haven't got the foam plucked yet for it. So, because I don't know how big the bases are going to be. I know how big the base size is going to be, but I don't know how tall the stands are, which is the variant. Anyway, so Rory and I were playing the game, and I had 20 Dracaria Witches charge a Knight Castellan. And so I went, okay, cool. Their base, 2 attacks each, plus one for their sword makes them 3 attacks, plus one for their combat drugs makes them 4 attacks. So there's 16 of them that are getting 4 attacks each. So I counted all them out and separated them. Then there's 2 with Hydra Gauntlets that are 4 attacks each and separated those 8. And then I separated 4 more for the Chardonnet and Impaler. And then I separated 4 more for the Hecatrix, who had an Agonizer, which had a different profile.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Now I've got all my dice. He agreed. We double-checked all the numbers. And hopefully I just quoted all that correct, but we did double-check it on the night.
Mm-hmm.
He's Toughness 8. I'm only Strength 3, but I had plus one from my Cult of Cursed Blade, so I was strength 4, not relevant to the conversation.
Yeah, but you felt like you need to put that in there anyway.
Yep. It was only when I started rolling the dice, though, that we were talking it through, that I realised it was not relevant. But once I got all the dice in front of me, I went, okay, cool. Weapon skills 3+, hitting on 3s, but it's turn 3, so I get plus 1 to that, so it's now hitting on 2s. So if you talk all that through at the very start, while I'm counting out dice, it gave Rory an opportunity to ask questions and...
And to check and confirm.
Yeah. So by the time I've been going, cool, I rolled 81 dice, I think. 80 dice, 81 dice, something like that. It was a decent like 2 big handfuls. And hitting on 2s, so he's helped me take out all the 1s. If I'd had a character there, I would have been re-rolling those 1s, which is, again, obviously another handful of dice. And then went, okay, cool, strength 4, toughness 8, wounds on 6s, separated, rolled them. And then once I got to the tail end of it, it was like, okay, cool. Well, this weapon's minus 2, this weapon's minus 1. Roll them in handfuls and give them to him a piece at a time. So that all the way through that process, we were both... I was going, okay, what's your save? 3+. Okay, cool. Minus 2, so it's 5s. He'd roll dice. And it was a level of interactivity that... It almost kind of interferes with any of the chess clock ideas that people have been trying to instigate into 40K, which I'm still not...
Oh, no, you stole my point. Sorry, carry on.
Anyway. but because we were both working together for the game, it meant that neither of us questioned what was actually going on. And when we did have questions, we stopped the game and looked up the book because it was a unit question. It wasn't a question on how does this work. It was a question around not knowing the actual units involved and what their stat lines were like or how they actually interacted in that scenario because they were new units. Like, I had Hellions on the table and I've never seen them on the table in, well, ever. and I've got 20 of them in this army because I wanted to put them in the army. And we both went, I got to a point where I went, okay, I'm going to shoot their splinter pods at those guardsmen. Now, the last time I used them, they were Assault 3. And this goes back, I think, I want to say it was 5th edition. I think they were Assault 3 back then, but I basically went, oh, I don't know. We'd actually better look at that. Mm. Went and looked it up. So all the while, when I got the thing out, I didn't just go, oh, they're Assault 2 now. I read out the profile. Yeah. Okay, 18-inch range, poison 4+, no AP, Assault 2. Mm-hmm. So that when I started picking up dice, my opponent already knew
what you were doing,
what was actually going to happen. So it was like, okay, I'm shooting them 18 inches. Yes, they're in range. Hitting on threes because my ballistic was 3+. Roll the dice. Poison 4+, fours. Saves, you're in cover, so you get +1. Saves. And, you know, it's talking through it out loud, like you mentioned with the way I play earlier. That's the thought process behind it. If I can say it all out loud, first of all, it lets me check that I haven't forgotten or missed something, because most opponents, if you get something wrong, particularly if it's wrong in your favor, will flag it and go, hang on, man, like, that doesn't sound right. But sometimes the good opponents will go, don't forget you've got +1 from this.
Mm.
Or don't forget that I've got -1 from this, so that means this to you.
Mm.
Which builds a level of trust so that you can just play the game and get on with it, not rely on sort of those sneaky moments of, ah, oh, you forgot to do this, so maha, or you forgot to apply this, sorry.
Yeah.
Forgetting to do something is one thing, but deliberately changing the dice results because of a modifier that you know of that your opponent might have forgotten is, it kind of sits in that borderline between cheating and sportsmanship, because that's a required thing to do with result to the dice, not an optional action or a stratagem that you could play.
Can we come back to that in a minute?
Because
I just want to touch on the chess clock that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we both sort of had some different ideas around how this could potentially impact using chess clocks. So when you mentioned it before, it was around when you and Rory were doing things together, how would that work with swapping the time out from the different chess clocks? What I'm wondering is, with games that do rely on chess clocks, how much do you think the need to get things done really quickly, because it's impacting the amount of time that you have out of your turn, would stop you from slowing down and actually talking through those moves and being able to be clear, open and transparent about those kinds of things, particularly with the dice?
So obviously the most well-known chess clock game is War Machine,
mm-hmm.
War Machine Hordes. The trick for me with that game, having not played Mark III admittedly, and only playing very little of Mark II, but having watched a number of games now, particularly at show,
mm-hmm.
The level of interaction between players in terms of you needing to roll dice or resolve things in my turn is all but zero. So at that point, the conversation still happens, unless obviously you know what the profiles are, but it still becomes an amount of, okay, I'm performing this action, this is the dice I'm rolling, and I'm boosting it, plus my stat is X, your defense is Y, yep, that's a hit, here's the damage, and you mark it off and you move on. So I think that vocalization of the action you're performing and the numbers that you're adding together could still play an important role in those sorts of games. But because there's no stopping for your opponent to roll dice in your turn, or very little of it, I'm sure they do hit chess clocks when those few things do actually happen. The problem with 40K is that the back and forth for that would be way more consistent and significant, so that you'd be hitting the clock regularly and all it takes is for one person to hit it and the numbers all go weird.
Yeah, no, I guess I'm more thinking about so you had your 81 dice out,
yep.
And then while you were getting them out, you were obviously talking through where they were coming
from and why.
Yeah.
Yep.
But then that, you know, the time when you take in picking out the dice and just, you know, does it then become, I've only got so many minutes on my clock, I'm just doing it really quickly and just throwing them down? And because that's what I see in events. What I see is players who are picking up a handful of dice, they're throwing them, they're moving things, they're picking them up, they're throwing them, they're moving things, and they're saying, this is what the result is. Without any of that talking through, this is what I'm doing, this is why I'm doing it. How much of that is about speed and how much of it is because, well, that's just occurring in my head and it's not coming out of my mouth?
Yeah, look, that definitely happens. Like, you obviously got more time in friendly games to talk all that through, but part of the prep for any sort of tournament is practice.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm going to play Rory again with the same armies,
mm-hmm.
I might be less vocal about that process because he's an experienced player. I'm an experienced player. We've played the game once with these particular armies. there might be less requirement for me to talk that out loud, because when I go, cool, 20 witches, 80 attacks.
Yeah, but you'd still say 20 witches, 80 attacks, 2 to hit.
Yeah.
Because that's what you say every single time you play the game. You will always say what you need to hit, and then talking through the, okay, rolling 4.
But I think there's, what I mean is there's a level of trust and whatnot that you have to give to your opponents who don't play the same way, and you then rely on your own knowledge to a degree. So when Rory was fighting me in with the Gallants, he charged me with the Gallants and they stomp, and they had 15 attacks. And I stopped and went, hang on, don't they only have 4 attacks each, not 5? And he went, no, knights have 5. And as soon as he said that, he then picked up a handful of dice, counted out the 15 dice that he needed, diced them out, and I knew that they needed 2s to hit, so he just took out the 1s. And he didn't necessarily vocalize everything the way I would normally, but he was relying on me
having that knowing prior that prior knowledge.
And the reason I like my way more than assuming prior knowledge is that it means that you can't ever be questioned on what you're doing. You can't ever be called out and gone, well, hang on, why are you rolling 20 dice? So you shouldn't be rolling 18 dice. If I say it out loud while I'm collecting them, my opponent has an opportunity then to go, no, it's not 20, it's 18 because of this reason.
Having said that, I think that, or how many dice are you rolling? Why are you rolling 20 dice? What do you need for hit? Those are questions that are perfectly legitimate. Absolutely. Questions for your opponent to ask. And this transparency has to go both ways. So you have to be, I think that each player has a responsibility to be transparent about their own actions. But then the opponent has a responsibility that if they're not sure, you have that responsibility to actually question and ask in a polite and respectful manner. But just checking out what's going on, why are you doing it? And doing that in a quizzical way to learn and understand.
I've seen people, like, using the witches as the example, who hit on 3s normally. And once you hit turn 3, the power from pain rule kicks in, which gives them +1.
Mm-hmm.
If you're across the table from someone and it's turn 3 or later in the game, and you say to your opponent, hey, what do those witches need to hit? What's their weapon skill? And your opponent says 3+ and leaves it at that, that's being deliberately obtuse. Because the answer should be, normally it's 3+, but because it's after turn 3, I get +1 to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean about clean play. Because if your opponent's looking at charging them and goes, oh, okay, how many attacks do they have? And you look at the profile and it says 2. But you know full well they have combat drugs and +1 from their weapons. They've actually got 4 attacks. You go, oh, how many attacks does a witch have? 2. You're not wrong. You're not lying, because that's what the profile says. But you're being deliberately obtuse so that when your opponent charges
I'm not sure as I'd use the word obtuse. I'd probably say withholding information that...
Yeah.
Is relevant.
So, and that's what I mean about being clean and clear about it.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why you can't go, oh, yeah, man, they're 2 attacks base, +1 for the Hecate blades, +1 for combat drugs. So they're 4 attacks each at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Or, 4 attacks each, but I also use the hyperstim strat. So they're 5 attacks each. And instead of just answering the bare minimum, and I've seen that happen at tournaments before, particularly when you start having these sorts of modifiers, what do they hit on 3s? You get charged and all of a sudden you're only taking out the 1s. Why are you only taking out the 1s? Oh, because it got +1 because it's turn 3. Well, you said they only hit on 3s. I said, well, no, their weapon skill's 3+. And I've seen those conversations happen.
Mm.
So, you're not lying, but you're deliberately...
withholding information.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that comes down to, I think, something that you touched on before, which is that whole sportsmanship thing as well.
Yeah. Obviously, that just makes you look like a giant jerk doing that sort of stuff and playing gotcha with your opponent through what should be a transparent exchange of information. Mm. And we've seen that happen very rarely, at least locally, where people start behaving a little bit special in regards to the way they start delivering information to their opponents. And it's normally when people have a personality clash, or they just don't get on in real life, or something's happened early in the game and someone's going to get them back by... delivering that information in the most annoying way possible. It doesn't happen too often in our experience, but it does happen.
Mm.
And that just makes you look like a jerk. Like, if you can kind of take the high ground a little bit.
Yeah, and I guess...
or speak to the TO about the opponent doing it first before you go and start behaving like a giant SOB.
Well, that's... I mean, for us, that's what we're there for.
Yeah.
We're there to try and be able to... we assume... that the people who walk into the room have the ability to have open conversations and to be clear and transparent. However, there will be times when there are those personality clashes or just, you know, difference in communication styles or whatever it is that lead to some issues arising. And that's what we're there for.
Yeah.
If you have a player who, you know, you're playing against who's doing something that you don't like and you're asking them to stop doing that and they're refusing, come and talk to us.
Yeah. And most of the time you can take them aside quietly and say, yeah, that needs to stop or that needs to change.
Well,
or...
and it's not necessarily even that. I guess our role as TOs, and I've gone off track again, it's really unlike me, I'm sorry. But our role is to go, hey, what's happening here?
Yeah.
Can you just give us an idea around what your experience is of this? And then are you aware that your opponent is experiencing it this way?
Yeah.
Is there a way that we can actually make this, you know, feel a little bit more comfortable for everyone involved? Rather than us just coming in and going, hey, you're doing the wrong thing here. Pull your head in.
Sometimes
or get out.
Sometimes people need that.
Yeah, but it's not where we start.
No. But the clean play resolves a lot of that.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. By having that open communication and by, you know, by discussing it and by letting your opponent know what you're doing and why you're doing it, what you're intending to do for the next move, and by carefully questioning your opponent if you're unsure, you resolve those miscommunications.
Another really good example is those sort of hairline charges for 40K and obviously Age of Sigmar as well to a degree, where you go, okay, cool. I am 15 inches away from you. I have a 6-inch move.
Mm-hmm.
That means I have a 9-inch charge.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually an 8 for 40K because of the 1-inch reach. But before you move in the movement phase, before you touch that unit, if I looked at my opponent and went, hey, dude, like this is 15 inches, I'm going to move 6. So it's going to be a 9-inch gap for the assault phase. Yeah? Yep, cool. So that when I move them, particularly if it's at a critical point in the game, it's really important to have those conversations so that when you both get to that charge phase, yeah, cool, it's a 9-inch gap, so it's an 8-inch charge. I need to roll 8 or more on 2 dice. Yep, cool. There's no moment when you get to that dice roll that your opponent goes, no, man, you weren't 15 away, you were 16 or 17 away. And, you know, you have to have a level of trust in these games at a baseline anyway.
Mm.
But at critical moments at, you know, later rounds of a tournament in particular, when the stakes are a little bit higher, or the perceived stakes at least are higher, it can be important to make those vocalizations so that your opponent knows what's coming. It doesn't help if you... say, for example, you moved a model and you went, hey, like, that can't see me, can it? No, it can't see it. And then... So you both agree that, you know, the enemy can't see your unit where you've moved it, and then they move in the next turn. You can't then complain that they can now see that because...
Mm. You've agreed that they can't.
You know... It's you couldn't see them where they were.
Yeah.
That doesn't change the fact that I might have a way of manipulating or moving that unit to somewhere where I can see you. But at the time, if I don't move, I can't see you. That's completely reasonable.
Yeah, and we saw at Southern Hemisphere Open with one of the games, we saw one of the gamers from Queensland who was really good at sort of identifying places where there could be potential for disagreement between players, who before he moved came and asked questions around... Yeah. If this happens, how would this be ruled?
Yep.
And, you know, and actually thinking that through enough to be able to ask the questions in advance so that it wasn't getting to a point of where there was disagreement and then having to go, well, in that case, I'm not doing it. Where was I on the board?
Yeah. I don't think he'll mind us mentioning his name. Simons was the captain for Queensland.
Mm-hmm.
And he was playing a game later in Last Blood on day 3 and came to me and said, hey, mate, how are you ruling the Vexator Mask for my Dark Elder? I said... What do you mean, Simon? Why is that a factor? And he went, oh, because my opponent's playing Custodes and they have Sweeping Dive, and the Sweeping Dive does this and the Vexator Mask does this. There's no clear answer as to how it's ruled. Can you please give me a ruling on it now before the game starts so that I know what I'm dealing with and so my opponent knows what we're dealing with?
Mm-hmm.
And I went, yeah, sure, that's easy. We got all the rules, we looked it up, we gave an answer. And it meant that the game started... knowing the answer to that question, which was almost certainly going to come up, so that everyone, you didn't deploy wrong, you had no excuses for when it did finally happen, that you went, oh, I didn't realise that's the way it worked.
Well, it's not about it being no excuses, but in my mind, it's about it being like not having that really bad surprise.
As, yeah.
Well, I thought it happened this way. When I read it, this is what I understood it to be. Well, no, I understood it to be this. So, you know, sucks to be you kind of thing. Instead, it was, we know what we're going into and we've got this clear understanding.
Yeah, Simon did that a couple of times for a couple of the games where he came to me and went, it's your event. I'm happy to go with it either way as long as I know before we start.
Yeah.
Which I think was a really positive thing. Obviously, you don't want 80 people coming in doing that for random games.
No, definitely not.
But Simon had recognised
that there's going to be an issue because it's not clearly written in the rules or clearly defined in those rules, then I think that's really great.
Yeah, Simon found one interaction in that game that was going to be a real issue if and when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of other armies that if he'd been playing them with his, the Vexator Mask does interact in a similar way with other people.
Mm-hmm.
But Simon's obviously savvy enough to go, I know what those armies are. I just need to know how they're going to work if and when I encounter them.
Yeah.
So, that was quite a positive thing from him to be that forward and that transparent and that forward thinking that he was trying to resolve issues that might not even take place so that he didn't get caught out and they didn't get caught out.
And people's brains work different ways. You know, some people are able to foresee that this could potentially be an issue and to clarify it beforehand, and other people just, you know, they're not able to because I can't think that many steps ahead. So, and whether that's around, you know, the way that people's brains work or their people's experiences or the different ways that people play the game.
Or if it's the last game on day two or the first game on day one.
That's part of how your brain works or doesn't work, depending on how tired you are.
There's definitely different ways you can be transparent with your opponent, you know, being clear in your measurements.
Measuring.
Yeah, look, I've seen so many people and... Again, it does and it doesn't matter, particularly with big block armies, orcs and tyranids and even horde guard armies for 40k, where you've got 100 infantry and you see people move the front row accurately and then just kind of shove everyone else behind it.
Mm.
And the argument these days is, oh, there's no blast marker, so I don't need to move them that accurately. The fact of the matter is you kind of do, because if you've just got them piled up in a pile behind the front rank, then you don't know how much space the bases are taking up. You don't actually know what the footprint of the unit is. It's hard to measure charges to anywhere but the front. You don't know how many models are actually going to be in charge range when you do finally roll dice. There's a whole host of issues. At that point, you have to go back and practice moving 100 models to make sure you're fast enough at doing it.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm not sure I'd want to be getting a tape measure out for 300 different models when you're...
One of the best fixes is a movement tray.
Oh, I think that's a whole other topic.
No, I suppose. But even if you do turn up with like movement trays that had five models on them that were spaced an inch and a half apart, and you can buy them online, and you've got a unit of 30 boys, you've got six of these movement trays, and you said to your opponent, cool, I'm going to be measuring from the base, not the movement tray, I'm going to be measuring to the models, because obviously there's going to be a little overhang, and I'm going to be moving the front, like you're essentially positioned, so there's one base in front of the rest, or at least they're equally spread. So you're still displacing them the right distances and you're still measuring the right ways. But instead of having to move 30 models, you're moving six essentially.
Yeah.
That's a really good way of getting around it. But as long as at the start of the game, you tell your opponent, this is how I measure to these, this is how I interact with these. Is that all clear? Do you understand? Do you want to change it in some way? And explaining the intent of them right at the front end to say, this is so that we can get our full game done, because moving 150 models takes a long time.
Yeah.
Rather than instantly going, oh, this is going to be a 2 or 3 turn game because this guy's going to take an hour and a half to move.
Oh, there's models.
So any of those sort of additional tools that are outside of the game, even the dice apps, the Warhammer Assault dice app, I've seen so many people just advocate for it, going, no, just use the dice app. If you hit the table and your opponent goes, no, I don't understand how it works. I don't know how you pick dice. I don't know how you declare results. I have no idea how that app works. If you stubbornly just stand there and go, well, I'm using it, that doesn't help. But if you turn around to your opponent and say, cool, no worries, man. Can I show you how it all works? Can I
use a minute or two and show you
just
that?
Show you how it all works, how I pulled the dice in. This is what I'm using it for. It's only for when I have to roll 50 dice or more or whatever you pick. And obviously using it on a tablet's so much easier than a phone, just because it gives you that opportunity to have a decent screen. You can put it on the table. Being transparent with the app to let your opponent see it and look at what's happening on the screen is another important thing about transparency. If you've got it on your phone that you're looking at, you're going, cool, I've got 80 attacks. Dice, dice, dice. You tap it three times. Okay, cool. Take 13 saves.
Mm. Based on what?
Yeah. Why? Why am I doing that? Yep. Because I can't even see the screen.
Yeah.
So any of those external...
I need something like a 40-inch to be able to see it.
32-inch flat screen on wheels that you wheeled around with
yeah.
you.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
Watch Netflix while it's not your turn.
Oh, there's an idea. No, I don't advocate that at all.
No, but
show respect to your opponent and actually pay attention.
Yeah. So no, I think.
For me, to be watching while the rounds are in play, I think that's a great idea. Just saying.
Look, clean play also goes both ways. If I'm declaring stuff to you, don't be on your phone on Facebook or Twitter or whatever it is you're doing.
I literally just said.
Yeah, I know, and that's what I'm agreeing with you.
Okay.
You
said it. But now I have to say it again. Anyway.
No, I was giving you a more precise answer. My gosh.
Okay. Okay, so what areas of clean play have we actually covered?
We've covered dice and dice-related apps.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about measuring.
Mm-hmm. Movement.
Yeah, I think measuring in general, though, is an important one. Because particularly, again, coming back to those games that have big tables with long-range attacks... Rory and I did it. When I deployed my models, he deployed a Knight Castellan in the back corner of one of his deployment zones. My entire army essentially went in the opposite corner, diagonally speaking, on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was deploying them, I asked, how far does the Castellan move? 10 inches. What's the range on its guns? 48 inches, except this one, which is, I think it was 60 or 72. So when I've actually deployed my army, I've positioned them in such a way that he physically can't shoot.
Yeah, so you're 82 inches away.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like it was positioned in such a way that turn one, I knew he only had one gun in range, and that was in range whether he moved or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it meant that I wasn't going to take a full shooting phase, and he knew that at the front end as well.
Mm-hmm.
So those sorts of conversations work really positively because, again, there's no, oh, I've got a 60-inch range. See, I'm 60.1 inches in. No,
yeah. We
agreed right at the front end. I've put a model down, I've measured it out and gone, do you agree this is out of range, yes or no? And it means that you don't have those unexpected hurdles to cover if your opponent doesn't tell you that stuff and your opponent doesn't get a nasty surprise when you do it to them.
Yeah.
So measuring's another one that's really important.
I wasn't disagreeing. I was just adding we've covered movement as well.
Terrain. Terrain is a really big one, particularly in 40K. A lot of players I see go up to a table and go, yeah, so everything's ruins? Yep, cool. And then they just start the game, not fully understanding
what that actually means.
Ruins are a very specific set of rules in 40K. And as soon as you start making things ruins, when they're not ruins, you start ending up with these weird interactions where you see a model deployed on it that then can't move. Even though it's not a ruined building, the rules don't let that model move into a ruin or out of a ruin. So now it's stuck there for the whole game because you deployed it there.
Having said that, if you start a game by saying, so everything's ruins...
And your opponent agrees.
And your opponent agrees, well, then you have actually been transparent about that.
Yep.
The difficulty is when one player assumes that that's ruins and one player assumes that it isn't.
Yeah.
So really it's about having that conversation to discern at the beginning what's ruins, what isn't ruins, how do those rules actually apply. And you don't have to go, okay, well, so if that's ruins, then that means that any model that's in there can't...
Yeah, yeah. I think the... discussing what you're dealing with on the table and how it interacts with the models. Okay, cool. So that counts as cover and it's like true line of sight blocking. That counts as cover, it's true line of sight blocking. How are we getting up this intact building? Because the rulebook doesn't have rules for intact buildings. Okay, well, there's access points to it. It's not a ruin, so I can't move through it. If I'm infantry, normally you could, but it's a solid intact building. Okay, I can't move through it. No worries. There's a staircase that runs up the back of it. Okay, well, I can move up it and down it using inches of movement, that's fine, but it doesn't follow the ruins rules.
Mm-hmm.
How do hills work in 40K? They're different to Age of Sigmar, and it's different again for other game systems.
Mm-hmm.
So being clear about what the terrain is at the front end is another very important thing to bear in mind, particularly in competitive play.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the last thing to be transparent about is your army list and your forces. Because there are some games, for a long time, Warhammer Fantasy Battles had secret army lists. because there were assassins hidden in units, there were magic items that you didn't know about, there were and the rulebook told you that they were hidden lists.
Yeah.
I don't believe it's that so much for Age of Sigmar these days. I think Ninth Age still has a lot of that happen. And most of the other games, though, are reasonably open about what your armies are. So declaring what's in different transports for 40k, declaring what upgrades you're giving to your different minions and masters for Malifaux, having those cards out and visible for your opponents when they want to ask, what does that do? And yeah, certainly for things like 40k, what upgrades, I mean, if you're playing a tournament, normally they're what you see is what you get. Clarifying where those weapons are. Any of the counts as sort of style armies is probably another important one. I've seen some great... I saw a Droidica Star Wars droid army at ETC back in 2012 that was actually a Tau army. No, it was Tau. So he'd converted all the models to look like droids from Star Wars, and they were all genuine models. But you're looking at it going, what the hell is this army? But all the weapons were correct. Yeah. So as soon as you identified the pattern,
you could
go, oh, okay, cool, I know what I'm dealing with now. And you might have to ask during the game, but at the front end, if you turn up with something that's not standard, explaining, oh, okay, cool, this before the Gene Stealer Cult Codex came out, I saw people running Gene Stealer Cult armies using the Orc Codex. And going, okay, well, the pure strain Gene Stealer models are Orc knobs, and the Neophytes are Orc boys with shooters, and the Acolytes are Orc boys with sluggers and choppers. And those sorts of really hype accounts as theme armies really need to be as open and clear as possible. It's one of the reasons why a lot of tournaments have started banning them, sadly, because they do just get too complicated, particularly if you make it into the finals. And
I was going to say, particularly when it's day game four on day two. Oh, it's just too hard.
So, but anything where your opponent could be confused or misled is where you should be being as transparent as possible.
Yeah, I think that what we're talking about when we talk about playing a clean game is doing what you can as a player in that game to reduce any and all confusion wherever possible.
Yeah, and if you can walk away from the game winning it, knowing that...
you've been open, transparent, clear.
You know, at that point, regardless of the fact you've won or not, your opponent should at least appreciate the fact that you've made sure that the game is as legitimate as possible. It's easy to walk away with a sour taste in your mouth when you get beaten and then find out that someone's messed up a rule or not declared things properly, or you feel like they didn't declare things properly.
I was going to say, I think that's more of the issue. What I often find is that people, they don't know what's happened. And so because there's that confusion or that level of, I feel like, you know, the way he was doing X, Y, or Z makes me feel like he was trying to hide something.
Yeah.
So it feels like he was being sneaky. So I feel like I've been cheated here. And whether there is actually cheating going on or whether there isn't, even if later on down the track he goes and he checks it and actually everything is fine, there's still that level of the experience of that game was I felt like my opponent was cheating. And so actually I really didn't enjoy that game, and it can affect the entire day or the entire event.
And it'll certainly colour your next game with that person as well.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, your experience stays with you regardless of whether or not it was proven to be correct.
Yeah. I definitely think that there's a lot to be said for, yeah, towing the line as accurately and cleanly as possible, but not wasting time doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you can play, like I, the armies that I build, I've never built Horde armies, so I can't speak for those, but most of my armies end up 50, 60, 70 model armies.
There seem to be a heck of a lot of little plastic models on the table that's in front because, of us at the moment.
But that's because all the riders for the Reaver jet bikes are separate. Okay. There's like 36 models there when there's really only 18.
Yeah, okay, that doesn't actually make a significant difference.
And all the Hellions are now on their skyboards, and otherwise there'd be another 40 there instead of 20 and 20. You know, but if you've got 50, 60, 70 models, which seems to be about the average for most 40k armies these days, if you're and you know your army and you're talking through all that loud while you're playing the game, by the time you hit turn two, turn three, you're probably not doing it as vocally because your opponent's used to you going, cool, how many attacks have those witches got? Oh, they're four attacks hitting on threes. And then the only change might be you hit turn three and then you update that conversation with your opponent about it being +1 to hit because you've had a change in the scenario. So
Yeah, so every time that there's anything that changes, obviously having that conversation and letting your opponent know and sharing that.
Yeah, and even stuff like at the very start of the game, Rory and I were talking about the army-wide rules, because I knew what he was fielding and both of us had no idea what mine did. So when we looked them up, I was like, oh, okay, cool, so this whole army gets plus one strength. Oh, that's really cool. Oh, it also only ever loses one model to morale. And that's a small change, but a really important one, because it will change fire priority, it'll change how much effort you go into killing the squad, because now you can't rely on morale killing them, you have to actually kill every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of information at the front end is also relevant to being clean and clear about it, because you don't want to be in a position where your opponent says, what's their leadership? Oh, it's leadership 7. Oh, cool, I've killed 13 of them. That's probably enough to wipe the squad with morale. Then you get to the morale phase and go, no, I only lose one.
Mm.
And you're left going, well, I could have shot more at them, but mm-hmm. I didn't, you know. I think asking all those questions at the front end, and, you know, you don't have to ask everything, and obviously you can't ask what you don't know, but anytime something, once you get into that routine of exploring those with your opponent, I think it only makes the games easier to play, and you'll get less salty gotcha moments out of some of the negative experiences, because they just won't happen.
Hmm.
So, yeah, when you keep the game transparent and clean for everyone, then everyone wins.
Yeah, I was having a think about it, and I guess the way that I always look at things is be the player that you would like to play against.
Yeah.
And when you look at it like that, it becomes really simple.
It's like the do unto others type thing.
Yeah. But, you know, just be the kind of person that you want to see in the world. And whether that's the gaming world or whether that's, you know, the working world or whatever it is, you know, you just be the example that you want to set. But it can get a little bit difficult. So I'm wondering whether or not I've oversimplified that, because there is the possibility that you just don't realise. You know, when people have been playing for a longer time, they do move quickly and things to them seem obvious. And so, you know, what do you actually share and what do you just, how do you share it without it seeming like you're going, particularly if you've got someone who's perhaps been playing for a little while, playing someone who's newer to the game, you want to be able to do it in a way that doesn't seem condescending either.
Yeah. Which is why I think if you just do it matter-of-factly, as part of the process,
and with everyone who you play against,
consistency. And like I say, you might get through turn three and you don't need to keep doing it anymore, because your opponent's kind of used to that process, and after a couple of turns of doing it, they might just at that point go, okay, cool. And you can gauge the level of interaction they're giving you each time you repeat a process, because if you're shooting the same unit three turns in a row and they're still clarifying it after turn three, then you probably need to keep doing it.
Yeah.
If they stop asking after turn two, then
You're probably
okay to just keep rolling, just declare what you're shooting at, declare what's firing, and then roll the dice.
Yeah.
I think things like basic stuff like counting dice in front of people on the table rather than putting them into your hand. Removing misses, not hits. I know a lot of people pick up the hits, which is just foreign to me when you start rolling.
Yeah, I definitely think removing the misses, because that way your opponent can very clearly see that everything that's left is actually a hit.
Yeah.
And that feels more transparent, which is what I was talking about before. It needs to not only be transparent, it needs to feel transparent as well. Our dogs are having a fight in the background, so if you can hear some weird noises, that's what that is. But we're going to keep going.
Anyway then, the other thing with dice in particular is, look, I've got a lot of Chessex dice and different styles of dice, and we produce our own OBSEC dice as well. Sometimes they can be quite hard to read. So, particularly with under sort of fluorescent lighting, it can make some of the transparent dice and some of the pearlescent dice quite hard to read.
Well, I guess for me, one of the things with that is, so for the OBSEC dice, it has the little OBSEC logo, and I always think that it's on one number, but it's actually not.
It's on six.
Yeah, I always think it's on the one, because it looks like it should be on the one, because obviously, you know, there's a circle in the middle and that looks like it should be the pip for the one. But it is on the six, so...
You don't put it on the one. Anyone who's making dice, you don't put it on the one.
Right, okay. Apparently you don't put it on the one. But it's good to actually be able to show that and, you know, and to share that rather than...
I also think when you roll big handfuls of dice, though, if you're leaving hits on the table and taking out misses, you actually get a chance to, once you've taken out all the misses that you can see, you can pause, look at your opponent and go, cool, so they're all
hits.
Didn't
see any more, yeah.
And give them the opportunity to glance over the dice and go, yeah, exactly. Hey, dude, there's a miss there, rather than just scooping them up straight away.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure that everyone at some point in time or another misses a two that they thought was a three and they get scooped up in the dice. And I don't think there's anything malicious about when that happens. But I think pausing and giving your opponent the opportunity to verify what you've done.
And with what we're saying, we're not suggesting that you pause for 5 minutes and through and move each dice individually and check them all. All of these things are really done really quickly.
It's literally roll the dice, clatter, clatter, clatter. Ooh. Okay, cool. I hit on threes. Take out this, that. Can you see any that are missed there? No, they're good. Awesome. And scoop the dice back up and start again. Yeah. It doesn't need to be a prolonged process.
But then also really moving the dice that you have. So, you know, when you've pulled out your misses, moving those really out of the way so they're not likely to get confused.
Back into the bag or the case or container what they came in, or just to another part of the board.
Just to another part of the table or, you know, whatever, so that when you roll down, you know, for your next part of that action, you're not likely to get them confused and mixed in again.
Yeah. Oh, there's plenty of times you see people just kind of move them off to one side a little bit and then you throw the dice and they bounce and clatter
everywhere. Yeah.
And it's easy to lose them. I know a lot of people have been moving to dice towers, which works for low dice count games like War Machine and
whatnot. Yeah, but I'm not sure if you can put 200 dice in a dice tower.
Well, that's it. 30 Orc Boys is going to be a lot. It's 204 attacks. I think you can get them 5 attacks each, so it's like 150 attacks. No, it's more than that. No, it's 150. But I think the even just a separate box, you still have to make sure you're taking any dice that aren't relevant out of that box before you roll the next batch. And a lot of this probably sounds like common sense to seasoned gamers, but I think people new coming into the community might not think of these things.
And so, like Emma said, who have been playing a long time with their friends and who are used to playing with
the routines, yeah.
Yeah, you know, if you're used to playing with the same armies against it all the time, you're not having to say these things every time.
Yeah, you're playing by rote at that point and everyone knows.
Sometimes it's nice just to have a reminder.
And like you said,
I saw something recently that said, common sense is a flower that doesn't grow in everybody's garden. So I think sometimes it's useful to.
It's an interesting saying.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that covers it for today. Play clean and clear for your opponents, and they should hopefully do the same for you. And then hopefully all of the issues that potentially arise are easily resolved and you don't end up getting TOs involved. And then we have a nice, easy tournament.
Yeah. Works for me. Because then I'll have more time to watch Netflix on my giant screen that we're
Does that mean I can go
apparently.
And buy a new TV?
No.
It sounds like you were going to let me buy a new TV.
No,
though.
I don't think it does.
And on that note, we will take a break to wrap up the episode. So we're all clear and clean then? Hopefully, maybe.
Sure.
So that was, I suppose there's plenty you can take that topic to, and in minute detail by game system even. But hopefully it's kind of giving you some ideas on how you can tidy up how you play to make it easier on yourself and your opponents, because that just makes an easier game, which tends to make it a more enjoyable game.
Yeah,
you're not having fights and arguments and
not necessarily about tidying up your game and things like that. Maybe I guess what I was hoping from the podcast was just to raise awareness about small changes that people can make that can potentially reduce the possibility of miscommunication happening or confusion happening or, you know, I guess just ways to increase the positive outcome of games.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, you've always got to remember that it is a game.
It is a game.
And games are meant to be enjoyed. And if you're not enjoying the game, then what needs to happen to make it enjoyable? Or is it time to have a little break?
Hmm.
And if you look at
We're not advocating that in any way, shape or form. Please come to Masters.
But also, it goes into all sporting events, all competitive, you know, anything that is a game inevitably becomes competitive, sports included. They're all games. Hmm. So playing with integrity and honesty and still enjoying the game is just as important. And part of that comes from doing it by the rules.
Hmm.
So, it's been an interesting conversation, actually.
Yeah. When Mike suggested this as a topic, I was like, can we really talk about that for an hour? Yeah, we really can.
I don't know why you're continually surprised, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But
it was only one episode, though, so that was something.
We did keep it down to one episode, that's true. Yeah, so we have, I think I worked it out to be one more podcast before we go away.
Mm-hmm.
And well,
maybe one or two while we're away.
And then we get a week's grace before we come back. And obviously we've got Masters just prior to us leaving as well. So Masters wrap-up will have to wait until we get back.
That means we've got three podcasts that need to be recorded in the next couple of weeks. So we really are open to any suggestions for what you'd like us to cover in these podcasts.
We do have a couple of guest spots that I'm hoping to get out. So talking about some of the awesome events that are happening next year and around Australia. Mm-hmm. We've been communicating with some of the other TOs around the country, which is really exciting. And if there's an event that you'd like to see us talk to the organisers about, you're more than welcome to hit us up and we'll do our best to get in touch with those organisers and see what they have to say.
Yeah, or if you've attended an event and you'd like to do a write-up about it with some photos, we're always happy to put those on the blog as well.
Yeah, definitely. And like Emma said, we've got a whole bunch of stuff from show that will hopefully be out over the next week or two.
Mm.
And, you know, if they stretch out into the holiday, then that's fine as well. But
yeah.
It's not much of a holiday, actually. There's a bit of holiday to it, but there's also a bit of work going into it as well, which is another watch this space for 2019 and 2020. But apart from that, I think we're done for today.
I haven't got anything else to say.
No?
No.
Fair enough, then. We've got a lot of things coming up, and it's exciting because we're getting samples delivered and we're getting this, that, and the other. So I'm excited, but I don't want to come out and say stuff without knowing exactly what it all means and looks like yet, so...
All right.
Anyway, we're going to wrap up. We hope you enjoyed the episode. Stay in touch, and we will see you for the next episode in 2 weeks' time.
So, thanks for listening, and happy gaming.
You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.